Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 400 years ago, in 1619, the first enslaved African people arrived on what would become U.S. soil. As we in the United States are marking that anniversary, there are many projects underway to bring a fuller understanding of the devastation caused by the institution of slavery and how that institution continues to shape the United States today. The African country of Ghana has declared 2019, this 400th anniversary, to be the year of return, an opportunity for African Americans who are descended from people who were enslaved to return to the land of their ancestors, to connect with their heritage. And that's what Keisho Scott did. She's a professor of sociology and American studies at Grinnell College, and she and her daughter traveled to Ghana in August, and she's on the line with me now. Hello, Keisho.
Hello, Charity. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah,
and
wonderful.
The program that preceded was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for being here. So, Keisho, I want to ask a little bit about the background of this year of return. Of course, when people were enslaved and were taken from their communities, their cultures in Africa, so many of those ties were completely severed. So a lot of people who are descended from enslaved people don't really know where they came from in Africa and don't necessarily have those connections. But these days we have a technology that is making it possible for people to find out a little bit more about their background. So have you pursued that in trying to understand where your ancestors came from?
Well, let me first unpackage that. That's a lot said.
Yes.
So I have not personally done DNA technology, but my daughter, whose interest in our family history, did in fact trace our ancestry back to Ghana, and particularly the Accra area and the tribes that are there. So that is the reason she joined me on this trip. But I think the larger project of the trip was to ask the African diaspora all over the world to be in memorial to what happened to the enslaved people and to give acknowledgement to the Black Holocaust that happened. So we have to thank, you know, President Nana Akufo-Addo for, you know, co-signing this activity and the 290 groups that have returned are doing those kind of memorials and making that connection. And many of them, you're right, have been spurred on and excited by the technology. In fact, I met one woman that was on my group. We were 69 in my group, and we had an academic conference in the middle of the program. She, in fact, had traced her ancestry to the specific tribe, and she actually met with them and was reconnected. And it was amazing for her, her father, her mother, her grandmother, and her brother.
Wow. Tell me a little bit more about the group that you were traveling with.
You bet. So when the Year of Return was established as a concept, groups begin to formulate all over the United States. So it comes down to about 290 groups in this whole year will be returning. My group was academic, community-based organizers and families that had connected their roots to Ghana in particular and the Elmina and Cape Coast Castle. So, and the conference, the academic conference that took place, you know, at the University of Iowa, was about the relationship between the Black Holocaust, the DNA technology, and the impact on the when enslaved people were removed, what impact did that have on Africa? We often talk about slavery in the United States, but we really don't own what the enslavement process was. You know, I want to say this. Most people are not sure what a Holocaust is. And I did a sort of you were talking about Facebook. I went on Facebook and looked at multiple definitions. But we have to remember that it is a destruction or a slaughter on a mass scale of a a group of people and their culture, and it is often acceptable by whatever government or people who have power. So most Americans don't know about the Black Holocaust, about slavery in the United States, but they don't know particularly about the Holocaust itself.
Right.
And slavery was a huge institution. And so my wanting to be there and to celebrate and to give honor to those ancestors, of which I'm a descendant of a slave that was on a boat that was brought to the Americas, it's very important that everybody understands that enslavement part was part of the structure of what then became slavery throughout the world.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into the Black Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
We, again, when we do learn about slavery in this country, we know that people were captured and brought to the United States, but that process was so destructive. And we can never fully know, this was 400 years ago, we can never fully know how many people lost their lives. But can you tell us what we do know, or what idea we have?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me lay out some facts. So first of all, the slave castles were built along the west coast of Africa, and they have evidence, archaeological and otherwise. I mean, you can see the Elmina and Cape Coast Castle. There are 45 castles were built by European states for the purpose of participating in the enslavement of Africans and bringing them primarily to Brazil. So 80% of the slaves went to Brazil and later what we call the Caribbean. They built slave, what we used to call castles, we are now calling dungeons. Because again, from whose point of view are we seeing this experience? 2/3 of the enslaved population were men. 20% of them died before they ever got to any site outside of Africa. And they came as far as the Congo, Rwanda, Angola, and parts of West Africa. In fact, what's so interesting is when Oprah Winfrey did her DNA, her ancestors were from Angola. So, I think my daughters were from Accra. So when we start talking about, the enslaved population, we're talking about two aspects of the Middle Passage, the International Middle Passage and the American Southern Middle Passage. You know, in 1808, the International Middle Passage was ended, but the American Southern Middle Passage continued. And so it is those kind of facts that are extremely important so that we can then look at how the enslavement of the populations in Africa left those communities devastated.
You actually visited these slave dungeons. What is that experience like? What's it like to be there?
I knew you were going to ask me that. And of course, my stomach just flipped. All right. I visited when I was 21 years old, and I visited when I was 66, which was this year. And the impact is incredible, because I am standing in a dungeon in which 200 to 300 people were packed in like sardines for up to 3 months, divided by males and females. And you can still smell, touch the walls of a very foul space. You can remember people urinated, vomited, slept in these quarters for up to 3 months before they went through the door of no return, put on ships, and sent to wherever. And it is estimated that about somewhere between 12 and 15 million enslaved people were moved through this process. And so how I felt was emotional, sad. I have felt in touch with my ancestors, and I know I am a descendant of a slave. When I walk the streets of Grinnell, when I stand in front of a classroom, when I have nurtured my children, when I have loved my partner, I am a descendant of a slave. That meant I am a descendant of someone who survived an atrocity. And I cannot think of myself, and I would hope no young person of African descent would think of themselves as anything less because of this particular history.
Visiting there this time with your daughter, did that change the experience for you?
Yes, it did in two ways. One way is that when I visited at 21 years old, it had not been marked as a United Nations historical site, so that the slave castle in Elmina, by the way, which is 537 years old, and when I was 21, they had not begun to do the construction of the, or I would say the buildup of the castle so that it could become the museum it is today. And more specifically, they had not opened up the dungeons at 21. So I was seeing the castle itself, where in the middle of the castle was a church where the Europeans worshiped on top of the slaves that they enslaved. Elmina Castle was visited by Christopher Columbus three times. I didn't see the slave dungeons, but this time, Charity, they have been excavated. It has turned into a museum. It is respected throughout the world. It is visited by hundreds and thousands of people. We were actually able to stand in the dungeon, the male dungeon, the female dungeon, and what they call the birthing mother dungeon. And in that experience, it was incredible. And my group in particular did a memorial to our ancestors, particularly those in the women's dungeon. And that was very impactful for my daughter. We called out the names of the women that we are descended of. And I could hold my mother when my daughter, when she said she called out my mother's name and my grandmother's name and my great grandmother's name. So there are changes to the castles themselves. And more importantly, the second thing is that it's a sense of an experience that anybody who wants to understand the facts can experience. By the way, at one moment they turned off the light and they said, imagine what it was like to be in this dungeon with 300 people with one little window to bring in air and light for 3 months. And we turned off the light for maybe about 30 seconds and you could hear the tears of people crying. So I think that this is an experience that one can have. And if we're later going to ever have real honest conversations about reparations, we're going to have to say, we're going to have to draw on the experience of people who have actually visited these slave castles and have that be part of the energy and willingness and witnessing of why we can be strong enough to have these conversations. I tell you about an experiment?
Yes.
I want to tell you about an experiment. In 2015, 35 African Americans were given permission at the Elmina Castle to spend the night in the castle. 35 African Americans, males and females, they went into the castle at 6 p.m. and they were going to stay till 6 in the morning. They took off all of their clothes, put on what they would imagine that enslaved populations had, chained themselves, and they stayed there. By 6 o'clock in the morning, only 10 of them survived. Within an hour, 3 of them had to be taken to a hospital, and the rest of them could not last an hour. It was so brutal and so horrifying to be experiencing that they don't allow that practice again, but it has become one of the things that many scholars talk about when they begin to talk about the horrendous experience of what that must have been for the enslaved population.
In this year, as we're marking this 400th anniversary, there are a number of projects going on to really raise awareness of what the institution of slavery was like. The 1619 Project from the New York Times is one that I would encourage anybody to spend time with, and the podcast is extraordinary. I've been reading a lot from the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education about teaching this history better in our schools, something that, that we've failed to do. And you have an opportunity to teach about the Black Holocaust, to teach about enslavement coming up in Grinnell. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Well, one of the distinctions that you made, and that will be part of the bucket list course that I will be teaching at the Drake Community Library, January 8th, the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th from 10 to 11:30, is that we will be making a distinction between the institution that carried out the enslavement and then slavery as it was practiced in Brazil, as it was practiced in the United States, as it was practiced in Jamaica. And I think that we can see the intentionality, and that's what that the, in doing so, I hope that part of the other class will then begin to talk about the impact. What was the impact, you know, on a community to lose, you know, 200,000 people, some of your greatest artisans, painters, people who did farming, what was it like? And then the second thing is to talk about the gender dynamic of slavery and enslavement. We hardly ever want to talk about that in the United States because it's such a personal dynamic. But we know, for an example, because African scholars now are writing about the enslaved process, not just European or American, but they are now excavating their own histories. And they tell us, for an example, that what about the 5 million mixed-race children created by rape that came out of the enslavement before they ever got on a ship? How do we talk about that? What is the meaning of that? And you can still visit Elmina and Cape Coast castles today and meet descendants who have European names, Dutch, French, German, and English names. So in talking about the gender dynamic, we're looking more positively at the truth about the history of the Black Holocaust.
Keisha, we could talk for a lot longer about this, and I hope we have an opportunity to do that in the future. But thank you so much for sharing this experience with us today.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Keisha Scott is professor of sociology and American studies at Grinnell College. She will be teaching a class about enslavement and the Black Holocaust coming up throughout the month of January at the Grinnell Library. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.